Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And we start with a double-headed good martini, both exposing the problems and huge problems with Obamacare. One comes from the San Jose Mercury News, which tracked down a couple of different Californians who were described as independent voters, but they were strong supporters of the president and Obamacare, so you have to wonder about that label. Cindy Vinson and Tom Washura, I think is how you say his last name, they're not very happy now that they've actually looked into the exchanges and found out how much more they could have to pay for their health insurance due to the individual mandate. Cindy Vinson will have to pay $1,800 more a year for an individual policy, while Mr. Washura will have to cough up almost $10,000 more for insurance for his family of four. The best quote here, though, comes from Vinson, who says, "Of course I want people to have health care. I just didn't realize that I would be the one who was going to pay for it personally." And then we move on to another aspect that we're going to talk about here, and that's Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius appearing on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who was surprisingly tough on her after four, five, six times why individuals couldn't get a year delay if big business got a year delay in the mandates. But here's the one that I think really got a lot of folks' eyebrows raised, because it's flat out not true. Jon Stewart asking her why so many companies are moving to part-time workers.
Businesses are cutting workers' hours below 30 to avoid facing the law of Obamacare. So what do you say to that?
Again, at least the economists, not anecdotal folks, but economists say there's absolutely no evidence that part-time work is going up. In fact, it's going down.
Jim, I know we didn't get a new jobs report because of the shutdown, but all the months before that suggest a very different story.
You kind of show the shamelessness of Kathleen Sebelius there. I mean, you know, this is something that's been on the front page of the New York Times. And, you know, when she says anecdotes of folks as if it's, you know, it's like an urban legend, you know, the Loch Ness Monster reportedly working part-time now as a result of the increased expenses of healthcare because of Obamacare. Well, this one and the other anecdote about the Californians expressing surprise that they're going to pay more under Obamacare, that now they understand what the Republicans are complaining about. We remember it was forced through on a party line vote, and things like the Demon Pass and the Cornhusker kickback were instrumental to getting it through Congress. But a big chunk of it was when Obama said, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. And if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, period. First of all, people believe that. And now we see that's completely not true. And in fact, this is what a lot of folks had warned, that eventually this would lead to government rationing of healthcare. But in this case, how much of it came from people basically believing that Obamacare amounted to somebody else paying more for them to get the same quality of care, the same level of care, maybe even more care, and them paying either the same or less? I think that's at the heart of it. Expect in the coming days, you'll see the spin of, well, we always said there'd be winners and losers under Obamacare. Horse pucky, and there's other words I wanted to use there. They never said that. That was never the pitch. The pitch was all upside, no downside. Well, here we are. The rent has come due. And as if it's kind of just a cherry on top of how much this has turned out to be a colossal failure that is nowhere near the way they touted it. The latest report that came from Bloomberg, the news organization, not the mayor, says that, you know, now once you get through the site, you can get through. It takes forever. You fill out all your personal information. You hope that identity thieves don't get it. You fill it all out. And it tells you, good news, you're signed up. And now they're finding out that actually, no, you may not be signed up because bad data is being sent to the insurance companies. So the insurance companies are saying, well, you know, the information is incomplete. The information is erroneous. So we're not going to cover these people. How you get contacted and whether or not the information is erroneous or incomplete is not yet clear. And as they said, right now they're doing it using, you know, in this high tech, it's the year 2013, they're using pen and paper to go through and correct the information, Greg. They're saying, well, look, we can handle it right now because right now we're dealing with a few dozen cases. When it gets to be 200,000 cases, they're not going to be able to go through each one of them and contact each person and correct all the bad data that's been put in there. The quote that just jumps out at me that I think is a very revealing one that I think kind of, you know, indicates, look, we're looking at the website. We have that smiling woman on the homepage who keeps saying, you know, how, you know, seems so cheery. She must be the first person in line who actually managed to buy insurance. And now this consultant who says, look, what we're seeing in public is the web portal, which is a mess. It is just as bad behind the wizard's curtain. So from The Daily Show to these Californians suddenly saying they're seeing their premiums are going up to these, you know, the insurance companies, everybody can now see Obamacare is pretty much exactly what Republicans said it was, a mess, an unworkable, dysfunctional, expensive, care-reducing mess that ought to be repealed, toot sweet, but that we won't because we have a stubborn president and a stubborn Senate majority leader.
On to the bad martini now, and the government shutdown continues in Washington, and it seems to be having a negative impact on Ken Cuccinelli, the Republican nominee for governor in neighboring Virginia. According to a bipartisan poll conducted on the left by PPP and the Republican firm Harper Polling, it looks as though 62% of respondents say they oppose the government shutting down over Obamacare, although both parties would say that they oppose the shutdown. But it seems to be hurting Cuccinelli. Right now, in a three-way race, he is losing 44 for Terry McAuliffe, 35 for Cuccinelli, 12% for the Libertarian Robert Sarvis. But if you take the Libertarian out, somehow McAuliffe's lead actually increases to 52-42. Cuccinelli's negatives are up to 56%. Jim, these numbers aren't looking good in any way, shape, or form.
You could make the case that Ken Cuccinelli deserves to lose this race. I think there's some Republicans who look at his campaign and feel like, for whatever reason, it just hasn't broken through to people. And sometimes they've had kind of generic ads. Sometimes they've had good ads, like the one with talking about the effort to get Haynesworth released. They've had really tough attack ads on McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe's entire platform seems to be, well, we're going to look at it and we're going to work out the problems. No specifics on that sort of stuff. I think probably, you know, he recently said he supported the EPA rules on coal plants. When you further, you know, asked him further about it, basically his answer made clear he had no idea what the EPA rules on coal plants were. And that's probably the best defense you can make of it. He's taking a very unpopular stance, but he's not taking it because he genuinely believes in the EPA rules. He's only saying it because he thinks that's what the audience wants to hear. And so that's kind of, we can forgive that from Terry McAuliffe. That's the good reasoning there. So Ken Cuccinelli is being hurt by all the advertising that kind of does the Republicans want to ban birth control and war on women's stuff. I think you can probably make an argument that he continues his day job as attorney general during all this, which has not been the case when Bob McDonnell was running 4 years ago. And I think you can argue that, look, we're now at the stage where you need to be a full-time candidate. Maybe you need to start earlier. He has been vastly out-fundraised and outspent and is losing the TV air wars, and that is playing a big factor. And then finally, you can just kind of say, I wonder if what Ken Cuccinelli is saying is really resonating with Republicans. And I know it's because the southern state Republicans, people more socially conservative, and the northern, I don't know if you want to say them, establishment fiscal conservative Republicans who just kind of want the wheels of government to turn, who want an orderly government in Richmond, if there's the division there is hurting him. But I think we're looking at this and saying it's an uninspired campaign. And there's some people who want to make the argument that a Ken Cuccinelli loss cannot be laid at the feet of conservatism, and I'm not entirely sure that's the case. I think you can make an argument that at least the Virginia Republican Party has had a really tough time coming up with a message that will compel and excite folks on the right, folks on the center, you know, basically anywhere. Because, you know, you look at the polling numbers for McAuliffe, you look at the polling numbers across the board, none of these candidates are popular. Nobody's really happy with any of these candidates. It's just the balance of power has now shifted decisively towards the north. And, you know, that means that Terry McAuliffe begins with more safe, reliable votes than Ken Cuccinelli does, which is a big change from Virginia of 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I think you can argue Virginia Republicans have not adapted well to that. And, you know, there's about a month until election day, actually a couple of weeks. Time for Cuccinelli to start maybe making Hail Mary moves here. Whatever he's been doing just so far has not gotten it done.
And if you look deeper into the poll, it could suggest something even more concerning for conservatives, and that's just a shifting political ideology in Virginia, which you referred to as opposed to 10 years ago. You mentioned the EPA rules that McAuliffe is clueless on. This was part of the poll. 45% of Virginians support the regulations. Only 33% oppose them. Also, 28% of voters said they agreed with demanding spending cuts in order to raise the debt limit. 44% oppose that. So, I mean, those are two critical issues in this state that are both easily trending away from the conservative principle.
Yeah, part of the case is, do people believe that the EPA rules will end up with no more construction of new coal plants, hurting the coal industry and higher electricity rates? Clearly they don't. Now, we on the right make that argument, and I'd hate to be in a situation like with Obamacare, which, you know, a couple of years down the road, our argument is, see, we told you so. But really, this is a case where it is up on conservative office holders and candidates. I mean, we in the right media can try. We can, you know, do our best to inform our audiences. But really, we don't have the megaphone that a candidate does. And for whatever reason, Ken Cuccinelli has just not been able to break through the noise and get people, you know, get through to people that if you elect Terry McAuliffe, your taxes are going to go higher and eventually your electricity rates are going to go higher. And that doesn't seem to be breaking through to Northern Virginia. And that may be, you know, a big key factor in Election Day.
All right, on to the crazy now. And we've documented pretty well, especially last week, how the administration ordered the National Park Service to shutter the National Mall, essentially blocking access to open air memorials that don't normally need any personnel on scene to allow folks to go in there. There was the huge confrontation at the World War II Memorial. We've seen reports of Vietnam veterans getting kicked out of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial wall. I think the same things happened over at the Korean Memorial. However, the National Park Service is absolutely opening the mall today to a massive immigration reform rally because the First Amendment grants free speech rights, Jim. I also was informed at one point that it allows the freedom of assembly, but apparently that one's not being enforced as much.
I've recently heard from a lawyer who's making the argument that, look, basically the government cannot say we're banning this kind of speech. You know, that's what the First Amendment is all about. So if you're going to restrict someone's speech, you have to do it in a way that is only subject to time, place, and manner restrictions, i.e., it's not a restriction on the content of what the, you know, what is the cause that the rally is for. If you shut off the mall to something like this, you end up suing the government and you get maybe $1 million judgment or something like that. That's why World War II vets and honor flights are being allowed into the World War II Memorial, because they're engaging in a First Amendment activity, but the rest of us aren't. That is a careful interpretation on the part of the Obama administration. What we can see, however, is that the mall, which, you know, this is shut, that is shut. It all depends on whether there's a National Park Service ranger to move the fence. The other day, earlier last week when I went, they had just moved the fences that were around the Korean War Memorial and Vietnam Veterans War Memorial. Apparently, they were rolling out the porta-johns for this pro-immigration reform rally. So basically, the National Park Service is there when Obama's allies need them, and they're intermittently enforcing the rules against folks who are, you know, not too happy with Obama right now. I really do think the rule of law is functionally gone in this country, or that we have a very arbitrary, capricious, and highly politicized civil servant class in this country. And, you know, as a result of that, the government is now a partisan tool to assist the president. Short of mass lawsuits, mass civil disobedience, or mass protests, or, you know, the options are limited here. The only thing we can do is, you know, showcase this and point out to people this is not a fair or legal application of the law. This is a very picky, choosy approach to law enforcement because, you know, that's the way the president and his administration wants it.
Jim?
Happy, yeah, I just say, you know, the line between bad martini and crazy martini is always a little blurry. And we may just replace it with, you know, the three maddening martini day.
No, just keep them coming. We're going to need them today. Jim, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.